everybody. Good evening and welcome to another episode of Citizen Kane, streaming to you live on YouTube from beautiful, bitterly cold Keene, New Hampshire. It's 11 December 2016. We stream live every Sunday night between 7 and 8 p.m. You can find the links to that stream on our webpage, citizenkane.org, or on the Facebook page, same name. If you are watching the live edition, keep in mind you could call us with your thoughts. 267-521-2771 is the number. Of course, you can always Skype us. That handle is Citizen Kane, and you can always message me directly. That email address is show@citizenkane.org. My name is Conan Soliday, and I am joined, as usual, by the lovely Shauna Nash, who I believe has something she wants to tell me.
You already know.
Do I?
Yeah.
All right, well, the people don't know, and they want to hear what's on your mind. Tell us. Pray, enlighten us.
It's just a quick announcement. And it's not something really to be proud of, but I am proud of it. I paid off all my student debt from when I went to college, all those years and many years of going ago. And I announced that on this show, one, because attention, hello.
you have a lot to say about college, and you've said plenty of things in the past.
I've said a lot of things, basically, that it's bad for young girls for their safety and their integrity, and it's bad for young men for their criminal justice safety and integrity, depending on which whether you believe the statistics or not. Uh-huh. And it's bad for everybody's intellectual health and their mental hygiene.
I am a free man.
John is free at last.
So whenever, you know, I get into any argument with anybody about college, how it's horrible, how it's a scam, how it was a systematic scam in the late 90s, early 2000s, under the guise of, doesn't matter what you get a degree in, as long as you get a degree in something, you will have a job, you'll make more money than people who didn't graduate from high school, and you'll be a more lovable person. That was an argument that I really did get when I was considering not taking on the loans for the last 2 years. So whenever somebody says, oh, you're only saying that because, you know, you just want to get out of paying your student debt, you just, you know, are like a entitled millennial or Xer, I kind of fall in between both supposed generation theories. No, it's not that I want to get something for nothing. I paid for it. It was a scam. And in any other rational society, I would have not paid it and been able to discharge the debt. But, oh well.
And you didn't vote for Bernie.
With
the belief that you would get your...
I voted for the presidential candidate who won and who would probably be on nothing but smiles, who won and would be probably the last candidate of all of them to... Actually, no, he might be more likely to proclaim a debt jubilee, which would be kind of surprising, but
I think he was talking about some kind of college debt forgiveness program as well at one time, but maybe he was just talking out his blowhole like he does. Well, I'm very happy for you and proud of you that you got that all removed from your shoulders, so now you can
get real debt for something that's of value someday.
You could take on some debt somewhere else. Maybe you want to buy some property or something.
Actually, with the way the city's going and the tax rates, I probably don't. Not in Keene, anyway.
Well, you know, it was definitely something that was sold to me my whole life, you know, that you need to do this in order to get a good job, get good pay. And they're still holding to that argument. The problem is that people who usually go to college are already in a state of mind that they're going to probably do better than their peers throughout their lives. They're that much ahead from the get-go. And actually, the fact that they went to college, did they really pick up those smarts from college, or was it already there in place and all they really need to do is put it into action, get a job, put it into action, and go to town?
Well,
I lean in that direction.
That would require thinking that kids who are going to college are smart kids. And I was pretty dumb in a lot of ways, and I sat next to kids in college who were dumber than nothing. And a lot of people, you know, totally flounder once they get to college and they're not, you know, the big smart kid that didn't manage to not throw a chair at the teacher in high school. So many kids start off with like really ambitious majors like electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, chemical engineering, and then the next semester, oh, they're a history major now. So, yep. Oh, well.
Well, I changed my degrees a couple of times, but that's because I really did enjoy, but I was taking classes that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I was at a semi-vocational school. It was, you know, your core, you had general majors and whatnot, but there was also the vocational side of the school, community college. And on top of that, it wasn't a bunch of kids. It was actually
adults.
And this was, you know, after hours, after work. And yeah. It was just a much better experience than when I did go to Acadie College in Tennessee, which was only kids. And it was like night and day. I mean, they truly didn't know what they wanted to do themselves.
Yep.
They were all over the map. Their grades were all over the map. You know, they were, most of them were failing. I was, you know, surprised that they were actually
even in there
as long as they were.
I know I did take, when I was at university right after high school, I did take a couple of language classes at the local community college. And even just then, there were kids in community college right out of high school, and they were a world of difference, more mature and more sane than the university kids, who also were just right out of college, right out of high school, I mean. But my problem was that I really wanted a classical education and had the intellectual capacity for, you know, falling off the top of the ivory tower. I was so rooted in getting a job and being a human woman that it was just not something I should have gotten involved in.
Well, I have definitely been picking up, and this is from the regulars who have been promoting this meme forever that you need to go to college to do good in life. I've actually noticed them backing off a little bit. You know, maybe not everyone. Maybe college isn't for everybody. All degrees aren't necessarily going to get you anywhere. There's, you know, go online and look at what degrees, what majors are actually landing jobs, and which ones of those are actually making money, and which ones aren't. And so if you're taking underwater scuba diving, basket weaving,
that's not what phenology is, okay? It's actually a system of, wait, that was the class I failed. Phonetics, okay? That's not underwater basket weaving. That's like how the study of the sounds as units of meaning.
Well, it is Sunday, and you know what's coming?
What's coming?
Snow is coming. It's coming tonight. They tell us it's coming tonight, 3 to 5 inches, and we've got to work in the morning. Are you ready to be out there 30 minutes before
you
usually leave shoveling away?
Yes, because I don't know if my work is going to be open or not. It probably will, but
one out of every five people in Keene, they can't just close up shop.
No. I'm saying I don't know. What if they do? What if I have to call, and what if they have a delayed start or something like my old job? Because my old job would have people shrieking about it every hour for the past week, and I don't know about this place. So yeah, I am ready to be up early to shovel away and have fun with it. So
good job.
And driving on the newly plowed streets.
Well, speaking of plowed streets, this week, the Public Works did a 30-minute presentation at one of the meetings. I can't remember which one.
It
doesn't really matter. And they talked about, you know, what actually is it, what goes into the process. How many streets and what streets are plowed and what it costs. Actually didn't talk a whole lot about money until some people started asking questions.
Of course.
I did not go to this. I watched it. If I had gone, I would have asked this question, but John Theriau was there and he asked it for me. So thank you, sir. And I want to go ahead and this is something that I've always thought about. I just never knew who to talk to, knew who to ask. And it has to do with the sidewalks. You know, it's one thing to make an argument that, you know, my roads, who's going to keep my roads swept so we don't have accidents and stuff. But then you got the sidewalks all over Keene. It's like, yeah, why aren't the property owners taking care of their sidewalks. We take care of our sidewalk here. Of course, we don't have a sidewalk, but we do have a, you know, there are.
We shovel around it, so there's kind of a pathway.
So anyways, John went ahead and asked the question. Thank you, sir. And hold on.
Last.
You go ahead and change that screen.
Is that Alex Jones talking? What is that?
Very loud.
That's awesome. Putting stuff in the snow to make the frogs.
Last spring, I sent a letter to the city council asking for how much the plowing and snow removal on city streets cost. And I was given an average of about $10,000 per winter.
Okay. Now,
I have no idea if that's big or a small number.
That is not what is budgeted for snow removal. I'm going to go into the numbers after John. But it might be. But I think that snow removal includes everything.
Not just plowing, not just
sidewalks.
But
salting. So it might just cost the city $10,000 a sidewalk. I think it should be more than that because they spend a lot more time on the sidewalks than they do on the roads. Roads are easy. Sidewalks are problematic, and I'll talk about that in a second.
Now, the 52 miles, I think, is the number you have sidewalks. Of sidewalks.
52 plus.
So in essence, that is something unique. I've lived, my wife and I, over the course of our four-year marriage, have lived in nine different places. So we moved around and seen a lot of different municipalities. And a town that in essence, clears the snow from all sidewalks in the town is unique. It's the only place I know that does it. And I can see where the town would have responsibility for clearing snow in sort of the central business district or from the parking facilities where they charge people to park. That makes sense. But clearing the residential streets in the rest of the town feels to me like a waste of our taxpayer money. And in fact, what it boils down to, since most of the sidewalks are in wards 1 and 2, it boils down to wards 3, 4, and 5 subsidizing the snow removal in wards 1 and 2. Most municipalities, the residents or the owners of the properties have the responsibility to shovel those sidewalks within 24 hours of the stopping of the snowfall. And if there's a fire hydrant that abuts their property, they're responsible for clearing the snow around that fire hydrant. Those are things that, in essence, if the policies of the city were changed, we could save money as a city and put the responsibility back on the property owners and homeowners in the city to shovel their own sidewalks and remove the snow around the fire hydrants that abut their properties.
Thank you, John, for that. And yes, and leaf removal is another one that has always bugged me. They say that it is to prevent the culverts, the drains, from getting stopped up with leaves.
Yeah,
and they have to spend, I believe it's $72,000 a year.
And it's pretty easy.
Removing leaves for a week.
And it's pretty easy for me to say, like, if I have a home that the leaves all fall on, like, well, those aren't from my tree. The wind blew them here. It's not my responsibility.
Well, here's what's going to happen if you don't clean up your leaves. And it happened to me the first year I was here because I didn't know my culvert, my drain was there.
Mm-hmm.
It got stopped up with leaves. And guess what happened when it rained? Big old lake formed.
Yep.
Now, it was, you know, slowly going down through there, but it wasn't going as fast as it could. And so guess who suffers for that? My house floods. So there is incentive for people to actually do something with their leaves. And you don't you don't have to do your entire yard. You just got to, you know.
Okay, well, we should have talked about that a couple months ago. This is about the snow. And he's pointing out.
All right, so this is but it's the same thing. It's the same kind of entitlement. And they're going to explain why. They do what they do, which is good because I never knew.
You want to hear my prediction?
Oh, actually, I was going to ask Shauna. It's an ask Shauna moment. Do you have an idea, a clue, as to why the city provides this service?
Well, he said that basically most of the streets are in wards 1 and 2. So 3, 4, and 5 are paying disproportionately for.
Yeah, we don't even have sidewalks out here.
Disproportionate. Well, and that's pretty good.
Yes.
3, 4, and 5 wards are paying disproportionately to plow, to clean up the sidewalks of 1 and 2. Who lives in wards 1 and 2? Sorry, not sorry, but old people and irresponsible college kids who are here to just leech off of Keene as a city because that's what the economy is centered around, the college.
Old people are everywhere.
They are everywhere.
The kids, though, I can see the kids who, you know, that they would never get out. They wouldn't get. They wouldn't plow their sidewalk unless they had to unearth their bicycle or their car or something. Yeah. Unless they had to, but they didn't
Absolutely.
Have to.
Absolutely. Well, there are also a lot of renters. There's a lot of renters.
True. There are more renters. I can see more renters being
in the city master. It's in the city master plan to have the center of Keene, which is kind of Ward 1 and 2-y, to you know, be great and wonderful.
Hmm. Well,
so that's my prediction.
As far as the budget, as far as we are budgeted for, city spends $14,000 snow removal at the airport. They spend $58,000 and it's budgeted under the police department. And there's also another $58,000 budget on the parking. I don't know if those are the same values, just in two different places. It might be two separate $58,000s. And, of course, snow removal, I don't even know where they take the snow. It's got to be somewhere around here. Some mountain of snow. But they spend $83,000 on snow removal. So there's a lot of money that's being spent on this. But
basically,
you know,
my prediction of Wards 1 and 2 has poorer and more people who can't, people who won't, and people who can't afford to clean it up themselves.
Okay, well, let's see what this city guy has to say about it. I can find the play button. There it is.
Instead of bought their properties.
And I appreciate that thought because I've lived in many other places and they do it. But I think as the committee knows and maybe the community recognizes, we're in a state where, of course, we can only do what state law provides. Believe it or not, in the 1860s, about 1868 approximately, there was a lawsuit. The city of Manchester passed an ordinance requiring businesses and the property owners to clear their snow in front of their businesses. A businessman in Manchester sued, claiming that it was double taxation because they pay property taxes, which includes the cost of maintenance of the highway. And in the state of New Hampshire, the highway includes parkings and sidewalks. That only went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled that he was correct, that municipalities cannot require their residents, their property owners, to clear the snow from the sidewalks in front of their properties. What the Supreme Court basically said was communities have two choices. You either community does it or you don't. It's okay if the community chooses not to do it. Unfortunately, in about 2004.
Okay, he's going to talk about another one, but I'm thinking that I wasn't able to find that, but I think it's bull. I think it has to do with businesses who are already paying versus
if it was
my
a businessman who sued.
Yeah, but I.
And it depends on if he sued as a property owner.
The sidewalks are owned by the city, and therefore it's their responsibility. I have a solution for that, and that is especially the downtown businesses. You take those parking spaces and you sell them to the property owners, or you give them to them. And then let them maintain them. And any businessman worth his salt who is trying to make money is going to make sure that his parking spots are taken care of.
I find a difference, though, between Main Street in front of, say, Subway there and the corner of Roxbury and Dover Street, those sidewalks. Like the sidewalk of Dover Street from Roxbury to, oh, God, what's that? Beaver Street. Mm-hmm. Okay, that to me is a different type of sidewalk. Like none of those people, none of the properties that come out onto the sidewalk of Dover Street on both east and west side of that street.
Someone owns that land.
Someone owns that land, they're not a business.
It might be the city.
Probably is a city, but nobody. It's not like, you know, there's landlords and homeowners who own that land, not businessmen as a business. Like the home that I lived in on Dover Street for a few months was not a business as a business. It was a residence.
On Dover, did the city plow your sidewalk?
No, never.
Guys?
It sucked. Dover Street is a terribly not functioning street. It is a big, wide pool of horribleness. Like you plow, I would shovel my car out and shovel my car out to the street, and then the street would be deeper than the driveway I just drove out of. It was horrible. I don't know how
How people lived? How do people even live on
Dover? I don't know how people have lived on Dover Street, like how Dover Street is not sunk into the center of the freaking earth because nobody, like, it's not been around for 200, 300 years and nobody could figure out how to live before, you know, 20 years ago. It blows my mind.
Well, as far as the whole idea of handing those parking spots and sidewalks over to the property owners mm-hmm. who abut those
you're talking about along Main Street, like the businesses.
Would also solve the parking issue.
Yeah.
There are some people who don't want them. There's some people
who
do want
them. It'd be a better solution than it is right now.
You could keep your meters, and you could handle the meters yourself. Or if you don't want them, you just put a sign that says, so-and-so parking only. You can pay some college kid to go around and maintain the parking spots. If you see someone who's camping out in front of your store for 12 hours...
Get the hose and the bat.
You call the tow truck. It only takes a couple times for people to learn that, hey, you don't park in that parking spot. There are plenty of private parking spots downtown that you know you do not park in because they will call.
Yeah. And I've seen people complain about the parking, like your solution of, you know, or well, everybody's really common sense solution of just let there be free parking. When I lived in Riverside in California, ooh, a Southern California city, so y'all should follow what they do, right? They had free parking in downtown and it functioned. There was time you could get a spot. It was, you know, they didn't have meters and it worked. And then they put in meters and it kind of went downhill. But what your solution is pretty much a reasonable one. It may not solve everything. There's always going to be problems. And one thing that I always see people complain about in response to the, you know, let the property owners decide and deal with it themselves, really anything other than what we have now, which sucks, is, oh, you're going to have people, employees, park in front of their own businesses. No, I've worked in three.
You get fired.
I've worked in three, four. Wait, I don't even know how many places downtown that I've worked. Nobody there allows you to park your car in their parking lot. They make it very clear that those parking spots are for customers. Mm. And if you are dumb enough to drive your car into downtown, then you're going to park maybe hopefully all the way over there. And hopefully you don't get towed. So that is the most obnoxious and dumb and ignorant possible complaint about the change anything about the parking system. They always say, oh, well, then the employees, people who own downtown businesses, they're going to have their employees park in front of everything. No,
Well, hold on now. It might not be your employee. It might be two stores down employee that park
in
your spot.
Yeah, people downtown, businesses downtown call the cops on each other all the time.
All right, well, I know that's what would happen.
They get along.
And I'm not promoting free parking. I am not promoting free parking unless the business owner is in favor of it. I am promoting privatized parking.
Okay.
Let the business owners, let the property owners decide how they want to deal with their parking spots. And yes, you're right. It'll get solved real quick if you're parking where you're not supposed. If the sign says this store only parking and you're in it and they figure out that 6 hours later after you've been there, you're not even in their store. Hey, guess who you're giving a job to? You're giving a job to tow trucks and you're setting an example and you're teaching a lesson. It'll get solved real quick. But a lot of these people they don't want the responsibility. They want to hand it over to some other entity.
Well, it is understandable, though, if you're a business owner and you have budgeted your taxes around the fact and the cost of maintaining what you do have to maintain, you know, and you do budget around the fact that, yeah, they take care of the parking. That's their problem. And you can tell the customers, hey, you know, sorry, that's just it's out of my hands. I'm a great customer service provider. It's the mean old city that's giving you that ticket. Mm-hmm. So there is kind of a trade-off from the perspective of the business owners. But, I mean, I've seen downtowns with no meters, just free parking because there's parking. And in that area where I saw it, it was full of antique shops and there was a horrible dying populace, too. So how different could it be?
Well, and by the way, speaking of parking, I know we were talking about snow and somehow we've gone on a tangent. But they've also added Thanksgiving weekend to the free parking days.
Oh, and now there's no more parking because it didn't work and it's so horrible.
And they were
oh, wait.
They discussed it must have been 20 minutes talking about it
Did they weep for the?
They were worried about.
They were worried about.
Yeah, they're worried about how much money they're going to lose.
God.
But
I hate them so
but
much.
But also setting an example that they're good and, you know, love the people, and it's Thanksgiving, and you know they don't want to scare people off. Now, it goes to city council, and they'll vote it in.
Well,
so now I think they're up to like 12 days a year.
At least they're that self-aware.
So all right, so the first reason was
there was a lawsuit.
1860, you can't double tap.
1868, same year that the Freedmen's Bureau went under. Freedmen Bureau Bank.
You can't double tap the taxpayer. And the second reason why they plow sidewalks is...
Oh. Unfortunately, in about 2004, there was another lawsuit over on the East Coast. I can't remember the exact community right now. Maybe it was Bedford. A gentleman who had a disability who used to take his wheeled motorized vehicle to the store. The town... decided that it wished to not clear certain sidewalks in the city, in that community. He sued on the ADA.
Oh, no, I don't.
And went to the Superior Court there, not the Supreme Court, but went to the Superior Court. Superior Court ruled that, yep, because of the ADA, the community has to clear the sidewalks for accessibility issues. Of course, that issue isn't necessarily applied statewide right now because, of course, the Supreme Court has not decided on it. But in general, most of us feel that if that similar argument was to come forward, we would probably lose. So in some effect, it appears that municipalities, if you have sidewalks, are most likely going to be required to maintain them. So yes, it would be a great thing if we could pass that requirement down to the property owners, but in the state of New Hampshire, you cannot.
So there you go. Of course, Filio weighs in and talks about some time in the past when they actually tried to do just that, and this is what he learned from that.
Okay, well, okay.
And to follow up on that, not just the legal issue, about a decade ago, city council did a thorough look about where we could cut costs and what services we could cut. One of the issues that we talked about, not even talking about the legal issue, was that we thought maybe we'd be cutting back on some sidewalk snow removal in the city. Well, we joke here that if we get five calls, our phone rang off the hook. In that particular case, our phones rang off the hook.
So he got five calls.
The city and the residents of the city were very
exactly
loud and clear. They did not want the city cutting back on snow removal. So that is something that the city has looked at, and it was very loud and clear. The residents, they said, find places to cut, but that's not one of them. So we have looked at that in detail in the past.
And my question is, did anything get cut? Because that's everyone has a golden calf, a sacred cow in the budget somewhere that they don't want touched. And when you break it down, everyone is going to be hurt some way or another if you cut something.
If you decide to provide for everything, then yeah, if you cut anything, someone's going to be cut. Someone's going to be hurt. Someone's going to snow. Wait, what?
Someone's going to snow. I have a feeling that there was nothing cut that year a decade ago because they couldn't find anything. Everything is important to someone.
Well, also, the other stuff, I mean, I can wrap my head around snow removal. With my college degree, that means I'm smart. I could, with effort, wrap my head around some arcane stuff. Not everybody can wrap their head around the arcane stuff, and even the city councilors have a problem sometimes wrapping their head around the arcane stuff.
Oh, especially when it comes to money.
So, offering to cut plowing is something that people understand. So that's what they offer up to people. Okay, well, we'll not do this thing that you understand. No, no, no. And so, yeah, they probably didn't have to find anything to cut.
And you also have the monument, the Washington Monument syndrome, where they, when they are forced to make cuts, and this is local, this is state, this is federal.
We're going to steal the kids' lunch.
They always seem to go to things that you said that people notice,
yeah,
like snow removal. They don't go to wasteful spending. Things that you don't even know about, some guy who works in the basement, or a bunch of supplies that have been sitting there for a whole year, or money that's left over, supplemental money. They go to things that people notice, like the monuments, or the kids' lunch, or sidewalk snow removal. They never pick on things that are truly wasteful spending. They go for the important things that people really, really think that they need, like this.
I do, because I've, you know, seen it over and over, and it's great rhetoric. So like a couple of years ago when it's, oh, the Republicans shut down the government and all the parks were closed. And, you know, I had a friend who tried to go on vacation in Tennessee, and the park out there was closed. And, you know, she wasn't dumb like that. She was like, oh, it's terrible that everybody sucks. But I can guarantee you that if they were not terrified of the ADA, or the ADA were repealed, because that's really all I've seen the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, serve primarily as a source for vexatious litigants who just haven't been declared such to sue and shake down businesses for money, and in this case, shake down cities for money as well.
It happens.
It really does happen. I think if the city were to say, okay, everybody in the city, Ward 1, Ward 2, we're not going to plow your street. We're not going to plow your sidewalk. We'll do Main Street because there's businesses and we're so tied up in there we can't wrap our heads around it. But residential street sidewalks, you do have to plow. You do have to clean it, and you got to figure it out yourself. We're not going to do it. That would be, I guarantee you, an additional burden on the homeowners and the landlords and the renters and the renters and the tenants. It wouldn't be in exchange property taxes will be reduced.
No, they won't.
In exchange, you could, you know, tax write off against your property tax bill the cost of hiring a kid to do it or something like that.
Actually, that would be nice.
That would actually be, hey, I got pretty good ideas, don't I? It would be an additional burden. They're not going to reduce taxes in any way or in any way make up for, you know, like there's a give and take. And I understand when people complain about snow removal and how, you know, don't you dare take it away, because they take the city government in property tax, in county regulations, and what, you know, you can and can't do on your own property. They take so much already. And it's very understandable when they say, we're just going to stop plowing the snow now. No, you're going to plow the snow because I'm paying my taxes every damn year.
Yep.
So, you know, nobody's putting on the table, you know, oh, it costs $82,000 for the city to do this on these residential areas. Why don't we not? And spread that $82,000 savings, you know, cascade it down the budget somehow.
This is how entitlements work. Once they get them, it is so hard. Once government creates a new department or a new entitlement or a new department, did I say department twice? You can't, it's so hard to get rid of them, because people become dependent on them. So yeah, back in the day, well, actually 1860, but at least some sidewalks in the East, you know, they were taking care of their own snow. And then
now for a decade,
they've had this free service and they're paying up the, you know, out the butt for their taxes. It's like, well, how much, what am I paying for? And so of course they're going to get irate. Like, of course you're not going to take my,
because you're not going to give it,
unless the taxes also went down,
which that will never happen. If they took away, you know, the kids' school lunch money or something.
Yeah, you put me in charge, and I'll be cutting across the board. I don't have any sacred cow in this game. I will cut from every single department, and I'll remove some departments. But they're not going to ever elect me. So
remove the HR departments.
A lot of other departments. So last episode, we talked quite extensively on the new charter officer evaluation process.
Oh, God, that was so boring. Not because you're boring, but because it's difficult to follow because it sounds so.
I don't know why.
Oh, God.
I don't know why I found it so entertaining. There was a lot of back and forth. Here I am making the argument, these guys, they all vote lockstep and they're all agreeing all the time. And then there was this meeting and everyone was, they're at each other's throats.
Yeah. Sounds really
exciting. And there was a lot of good points that were brought up on both sides. And I just got a real kick out of it. The process was sent back. It went through two steps. Actually, went through three steps. Finally, made its way to City Council. City Council decided to send it back to FOP for more work and more discussion. So they did. They sent it back. And basically, here it is in a nutshell. Stay awake, Shauna. Here it is in a nutshell. Up until this year, the FOP chair has devised an evaluation system for the charter officers, which are the city manager, the city clerk, and the city lawyer.
Yeah.
It's always been his responsibility, and then he sends it to the FOP committee, and then eventually it makes its way into a closed city council meeting where you've got 15 councilors and a mayor grilling each one of these charter members.
Yeah.
And some people are not in favor of that, especially – oh, and there was a minute-taking issue.
Yeah.
Where one of the other charter members was keeping the minutes of basically a charter member who was being evaluated, which is something you would think if an evaluation should be private, these were not that. So anyways, they revised Greenwald, who is the FOP chair, revised the flow a little bit, make it more transparent. One of the bigger deals was that
what happened?
The FOP lost their responsibility for evaluating these charter members. And it was just the chair members, the chair committee members, three of them, on with the charter officer, and now there's no need to keep minutes.
Why is there no need to keep minutes?
Because of quorum, because there's not enough in the room to require that. So it can basically be closed, no one knows about it. And that's one of the things that Terry Clark was talking about, was that this is not transparent. This is behind closed doors, smoke-filled room.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have this. And not only that, but I don't get to see what the other councilors are saying about this charter member. So anyways, as an employee to the who are underneath the councilor. City employees, no, but these three members of the city are right below the councilors. They can hire, fire them, evaluate them. That's their job. These three are responsible for everyone else. Also, you can throw the police chief in there too, but I don't know what his title is. Anyways, this is the first time this has been done. It's brand new. It does create standards that can be followed every year, which is a good thing. The mayor, of course, weighs in and explains the...
He is one of the people that will be evaluated through this secret evaluation process.
The mayor will not be evaluated by this, and he will not be doing the evaluation. He is he's on the sidelines. So he's going to explain this system.
Just one very quick little point. This is an experiment. This is the first time we will have done this using this system. We are trying to incorporate the goals developed by the council. We are trying to make sure that the entire council has an opportunity to be involved in this process, but it's an experiment. We're not proposing to incorporate this into the rules at this point. We're not proposing to make this by ordinance or resolution. We are simply trying to see what works and what doesn't work. If this works, great. Eventually, we may very well propose that it become part of the rules of the city council. Right now, and I know there's been references to Rule 22, there is nothing in the rules of the city council as to the evaluation for charter offices. Nothing at all. The charter offices under the city charter and under state law are not personnel of the city. They are, in fact, hired by the entire city council, and they have a different role and a different category of employment, if you will. So that we are trying to incorporate this and find out what works. If this works, we will then memorialize it and make it part of the permanent structure of the city. If it doesn't work, we'll change it. We'll try something else. Councillor Greenwald, Councillor Powers have been working on this for over a year that I'm aware of in trying to move this thing forward. I think it's time that we bring it to a resolution, that we try this, see what works. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, we can try something different.
Thank you.
I am curious as to what is their metric for works and does not work.
They have 15 people there who will be able to talk about it in a year.
They can, they'll talk amongst themselves?
They should be doing that all the time. But yes, they can actually, it'll probably come back up. Like I said, it's not an ordinance yet. It's not in the city charter.
But if there's
they're going to have to deal with this in a year again. And by then, people will have an idea what they think about it.
How would they remember a year later if there are no minutes to any of the meetings about whether it worked or not?
I guess we're going to see.
I mean, the concept of employee evaluations is new because it's a convergence of a very feminine, and I say that deliberately, not feminist necessarily, but feminine infestation, and I don't mean that in a bad way, of the larger workforce as a whole, the sphere of influence being feminized. And a lot of it does come with the socialist of about 130 odd years ago, trying to numberize and put numbers to every aspect of work.
Dronize?
Well, to dronicize it. But at the same time, that's what this employee evaluation is, pretty much.
We talked about
this
last week.
And yet they're not keeping minutes. Well, they're not putting numbered rubrics to their standards of this works, this doesn't work. They're going by their tummy heart.
Yeah, there is an eval. There's a written eval.
There's an evaluation of the evaluation process.
They have all the counselor comments. You have the sitting chair's comments, and you have the actual employee's comments, and of course you have your list of things that need to be discussed, talked about, and goals and whatnot. So yeah, it's all there, but then it gets sealed and no one ever sees it. I don't know how you actually get into that afterwards.
Need to unseal it and look at it a year later.
Yeah, and I don't even know how you do that. I don't know if you can do that, if that's legal.
For them to do.
So,
oh, God.
All right, so Chad Bourne weighs in. I like what she had to say.
All right.
The council has an obligation to the public to ensure that the charter members are conforming to the best standards. And I agree that it's less intimidating and probably more comfortable and probably more constructive to have a smaller group that ultimately meets in the beginning and the end with the employee. However, I also think that in the process, the full council should meet as a body and have a discussion, perhaps after the evaluation, meaning after the self-evaluation from the employee. And the council acts as a body, and we hire and fire a manager as a body, and we don't sparse it down to five people funneling through one person or four people funneling through another person, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think somewhere in this process that we're looking at, we should consider the full council meeting. I also think that there should be minutes. I mean, we have an obligation to the public, and I think that the three charter members are really, they have a lot of power.
And they make a lot of money.
And they have a lot of responsibility. And they deserve respect and they deserve a fair process, but not if it usurps the council's responsibility in terms of, breaking us up like that. I don't agree with that. And there's things that can be gained when you have a discussion of the full council that aren't going to be gained when just one counselor is talking through one chair.
And I actually agree with that a whole lot. The not necessarily having every counselor, 15 of them, and the mayor grilling these people, but to actually be able to have a moment where they can speak amongst themselves, like, hey, how do you feel that lawyer is doing these days? Has anyone have any issues that have come up in the past? Is everyone happy? okay, because this evaluation is taking place right now. If you have comments you want to make, you know, write them, put them in writing, send them to your chair.
So not as 15 different evaluations or one evaluation of 15 people evaluating one person at a time, but the discussion about the evaluation.
Correct. Allow the chairs, the three chairs, to be the only people who actually touch, who are actually
in the room. The employee.
But before that, actually have a moment where they sit down and talk about it. It would have to be a closed meeting because they're talking about a private employee and this is private. But you would have to keep minutes because you have enough of them in the room. Attorney Mullins brought up a really good one. It's, you know, you guys could keep the minutes and, you know, just go ahead and record it. Record the meeting.
Subject to a FOIA, I guess.
That's what this really boils down to.
Yeah.
The new system doesn't require all that work.
And that's what Ms. Chadbourne was saying she didn't like, was the new system of funneling. Because that actually made it very clear, her description of it as funneling, you know, the council acts as a body, and this is not as a body, this is funneling, you know, five people this, four people that. That was actually really kind of clarified what, in general, what it is as opposed to what it should be.
Yeah.
Is what she thinks it should be.
Powers weighs in. Powers, of course, it turns out he's one of the co-writers, and he is tired of dealing with this issue.
Aww.
We're good. We're good at complicating stuff. We're talking about minute takers and hiring people. Why are we complicating this so much? This is a personnel evaluation, and we're going to get it kicked off by the HR department, and that's their role. And one of the reasons we've got a screwy system now is because 25 years ago we didn't have an HR department. We got all the cans ready to be piled up here, and we're starting to kick it down the road again. I think we're almost there. Let's just get back to some basics and keep it simple. I don't think we need, if we gold plate this thing in a year, we got all the rules we need. It says in the code the city council will evaluate those charter employees, then just do it. Because if we make a council rule, it'll take us six more years to make any amendments to it. To the point that it's not the way we did it before, so what? Let's just do it and see how it goes. If we have seven or five, it's going to be complicated. It's a complicated process. 15 members and a mayor sitting in trying to do an evaluation with the person in front of you doesn't work. If an individual counselor has got a question, they should be making that question to the individual anytime, not waiting for the evaluation. Their comments when they get back through the format should be correlated, and if there's nine of us that feel the same way, that's an important topic to be discussed, and it should be addressed. Trying to rebuild this tonight is just, we're 1 year behind right now. You got a gentleman sitting over there that deserves an evaluation. Well, more importantly, it's a year for you. We asked him to do a job, we haven't told him what to do, haven't told him how well he's doing. And if we keep going, we're never gonna.
And he'll be gone before we get there.
It's like I was never here.
See, this is entertaining.
It's animated, and sometimes they use language that I can wrap my head around.
I think he brings up a really good point, even though I think he's rushing this, and that is, if you have a problem with any of these guys,
just bring it
you
up
have
right
a whole,
now.
You have 356 days, 65 days out of the year to talk to them or to talk to each other or, you know, get down to the bottom of this. And yes, you are the hire or fire of these people. So if there's something, if a true issue is come to light, you know.
But that's what he.
Fire them.
That's what he said the HR department is for, is supposed to deal with this. And the HR department. You know, and I'm not speaking as somebody that's been shafted by HR in any way, and I don't want to or plan to or anything, but outsourcing the hiring and firing, outsourcing the dealing with an employee who has a problem or deserves praise or whatever, you know, or deserves a, hey, you need to actually get your F and act together. Outsourcing that means there's a middleman, there's a layer of bureaucracy and red tape. There's a barrier to efficient employee handling and employee coaching and telling them to set goals. I mean, the whole idea of setting goals is just so, you know, you're trying to avoid the cost of somebody getting burnt out at their job or immediately leaving for greener pastures. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, it's the people who, you know, it's another burden that they are trading off.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how much. I think HR just keeps the information on these employees. They are the responsibility of the counselors. Mm-hmm. Just those three. Everyone else in the city falls under HR.
Then they shouldn't have an HR department, I guess.
Well,
I don't know.
They should, because HR is actually taking care of the other 99.9% of the city employees.
We should evaluate them all on the 4th of July in Central Square.
Well, Powers,
tomatoes and lettuce.
He did get some response from Chad Bourne, who brings up another good point.
I just wanted to say, in regards to Councillor Powers, it was taken off the agenda back in July, and if we had been continuing these public discussions like this, we probably would have arrived even before now. So I really kind of resent the implication that we were just kicking it down the road.
Snip, snap!
I'm glad that in...
So there you go. There's choice nuggets in here. It gets fun after a while. My life sucks.
You should take your girlfriend out on dates more.
So, all right, so the original process was amended. They added the ability for... All right, so the second process, so HR sends the evaluation to the FOP chair, and he hands it out to everybody. He hands it to the city councilors, as well as the evaluation form, which is what Clark wanted. He wanted to be able to see what the city employee had to say about himself and also see what the other councilors were saying.
So he's not going to get a blank form. He's going to get the form filled out by that employee.
The second the third part of the flow reads, let me change this to the screen so people can see it. Okay. So it goes to the FOP chair. He sends it one way to the employee, and it sends the other direction to the city councilors, and changed where it says FOP chair invites input from city councilors.
That's in the form of them getting a copy of the
And added to that, and sends them the evaluation form, period. Now, I wish that was a little clearer, because the evaluation form could be a blank evaluation form.
Or it could be filled out by the employee.
That's what direction they're leaning, except it doesn't actually say that it has to be, so I'm thinking it should have been... And sends the employee's completed evaluation form to the city councilors.
So I was asking a good question a minute ago.
What's that?
Are they getting a completed form or a blank?
That's what
form?
Clark was pushing for, and that's what I was pushing for. But that doesn't,
because that would actually
this flowchart doesn't actually say that. So I would have.
That would actually be useful, because so what if it's? I mean, it would be useful either way if you have the form. You have the questions that they are having to fill out and prepare, then you kind of have an idea of what to ask that employee. But I would immediately want to see that employee's answers if I'm going to evaluate them. But because it makes so much sense and what I would initially think, that's probably what I'm thinking the city's not doing.
Well, I don't know. I'm still leaning towards the whole council getting together and having lunch.
No, I think my idea...
And talking about how they feel about this individual and then evaluating them.
No, my idea was better.
Which one?
Get rid of the city HR department, whatever that is, and they all come down to Central Square on the 4th of July after the parade. Get them a hot dog.
And duke it out?
No, they don't duke it out. They just get evaluated. And if they want to come to work the next day, then that's their own problem.
Greenwald, I think, closes this up pretty nicely. Here he is.
I'm glad that in prior years I did not ask for all this input. I just presented what it was, and it happened, for better or for worse, and I think it was not all that bad to begin with.
There you go, and he was getting the rough end of the stick for real. He tried to formalize the system, something that he and FOP chairs before him had been taking care of for years and years and years, and no one had any input, no one had any problems. And this year, he actually tries to do a good thing, formalize it, make it, you know, standardize it, and he definitely got the wrong end of the stick on this one.
He can.
But that's
take
his job.
It up
that's
on Central Square on the 4th of July.
That's your job, Greenwald.
Until then.
Good job.
I got my form, filling it out myself for you. So
I think I have something about.
What do you got?
I've got thousands of government documents.
Now we've just got more.
More frogs in the water.
We have 15 evals with probably 15 counselor statements stapled to each one. So now we're just killing trees on these stupid evals.
Oh, but if they go paperless, it'll solve all the... Yeah, okay, sure. Paperless is a scam. Thank you very much. Take it up on the 4th of July.
Wait. Why is paperless a scam? It saves them a lot of money, and they don't cut all them trees.
No, there's forms required by government at some level, federal, state, business regulations that require forms to be filled out anyways. There's plenty of we are going paperless statements that have to be sent anyways. There's a lot of statutory stuff that's never going paperless, and it's kind of all a scam. Sorry.
Excellent.
Guys, you've been watching Citizen Kane. Please visit our website, citizenkane.org. You can see all the previous videos there with us talking about what we just talked about. Boring Kane politics. Of course, please visit our Facebook page, same name, citizenkane.org. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can call that number anytime during the week and leave a message. Or, of course, you can always email me. The email address is show@citizenkane.org. Shauna, thank you so much for putting up with me.
I'm going to turn the heater on.
Guys at home, thank you so much for watching. We will see you again the exact same time next week. Good night.
Cold.
Yeah, it's pretty cold.
Yeah, it is.